Hello and welcome to Pod Rights, a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. Sexual harassment has been big news in the last few years. We've seen some very high-profile cases play out in our headlines, in big business, and in the political arena. And we've seen how damaging these allegations can be for the organisations concerned. Here at the Commission, sexual harassment is one of the major areas of gender inequality that the Sex Discrimination Commissioner, Liz Broderick, and her team researches, and to which Liz dedicates her advocacy in trying to address. And in fact, in the last couple of weeks, Liz released a Working Without Fear, results of the Sexual Harassment National Telephone Survey for 2012. This research is conducted every 4 years, and this is its third iteration. So here to talk with me about this issue and her research is Sex Discrimination Commissioner Elizabeth Broderick. Welcome back to Pod Rights, Liz.
Thanks very much, Graham. It's great to be here.
Now, Liz, I guess the first thing that we should do is to make sure that we all know what we're talking about. So tell us what sexual harassment exactly is. How do you define it?
Well, sexual harassment under Australia's laws is unwelcome conduct, and the unwelcome part's very important, unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature which offends, intimidates or humiliates, and it's reasonable or it's reasonably anticipated that the target of the harassment would feel offended, humiliated or intimidated. So it might be things like unwelcome kissing, hugging, cornering. It might be sexually explicit text messages or intrusive questions about your personal and sex life.
And the research shows that there's a certain lack of understanding of what sexual harassment is, doesn't it? Tell us about this phenomenon.
That's exactly right. And in fact, we found that across the three surveys, that when you ask people, well, have you ever been sexually harassed, and you read them the legal definition, many of them will say no. But when you go on and ask them a behavioural-based question, such as, have you ever experienced unwelcome, repeated hugging, kissing or cornering? They say, oh, yeah, no, look, that happens regularly. And in this 2012 survey, we found about 18% of people who answered no to the question, have you ever been sexually harassed, had actually experienced those behaviours.
Isn't that interesting? So there's a separation between the legal definition and the actuality.
You're absolutely right. And just not a good understanding of what sexual harassment it is and the fact that it is unlawful.
Okay. Well, let's take a step back and let me ask you what sort of research this is, because as you said, it's now been happening for 12 years, each 4 years, and why is it so significant?
Look, it's significant because it is the only national survey or national prevalence data in Australia which speaks to how frequent sexual harassment occurs, but also the nature of it and where it occurs. So we had the first survey in 2003, which gave us the benchmark data, and we've been able to look at trend data since that time.
And that's really useful to be able to look over a long period of time, isn't it?
That's right, because you can see whether we're making any impact on this particular social issue. And that's one of the things the 2012 survey looked at.
And are we making impact? What are the major findings in this research compared to the last survey in 2008?
Well, the major finding is, unfortunately, that sexual harassment is still a pervasive and persistent problem in Australia. There was a couple of good news stories, and that was that those people who actually brought a complaint, particularly in the workplace, were either satisfied or highly satisfied. 75% of them were with the outcome, and not only that, that their complaint, the majority of complaints were resolved within a 1 month period. So there's some good news, but I suppose the underlying message is that we're still not doing enough to eradicate sexual harassment from the Australian landscape.
So let me just focus on that complaints data for a minute, because that is good news. When you talk about a complaint in that sense, you mean a complaint within the workplace, so they haven't even taken it outside to Fair Work Australia or to the Australian Human Rights Commission or whatever?
No, not at that stage. Many companies, and I think that's one thing that's changed, and that's got to be a positive, that most organisations today have some form of transparent complaints mechanism that people can access. And those that did seem to be pretty happy with it.
So maybe organisations are better at reacting, but not so good at proacting, if I can use that word. In other words, addressing it in the first place. Is that a reasonable conclusion to draw, Liz?
I think you're absolutely right, Graham. I think, you know, there has been any positive steps in terms of reacting, but the trouble is that we know the majority, by far the vast majority of people who experience sexual harassment, they will never make a formal complaint. In fact, our study found in 2012 that only 20% of those who had been harassed actually brought any form of formal complaint.
So it's one thing to set up a complaints mechanism, it's another thing to change the culture.
That's exactly right. And, you know, smart employers are being much more proactive about this. They're making sure that there is a language and a conversation to be had in the workplace about this particular issue.
Yeah, okay. Now, for the first time, you've looked at sexual harassment as it applies to young people. Why did you do that, Liz, and what did that reveal?
Yes, we did. For the first time this year, we took the age, starting age back to 15. Mm-hmm. That was in recognition that many young people are entering employment from really 14 and 9 months onwards. Mm-hmm. What we found is that the group which has the greatest prevalence of sexual harassment, or who are more likely to be harassed, are the age group 18 to 24. So they had the highest rates of sexual harassment. Mm. I mean, in fact, by far the vast majority of people who experience sexual harassment are under the age of 40.
But going back to the really young group that you looked at, what were the numbers there? But what you'd have to think that there'd be a greater impact on girls of that age. Is that a reasonable presumption to make?
Yeah, well, I think that there's no question that we found that quite a number of young people, so going into their first jobs, have been sexually harassed. And in fact, a couple of years ago, I ran a focus group where I interviewed many young people. 50% of them had been sexually harassed in their first or second job. And it was really when one of them said to me, she said, "Look, Liz, I know if my uncle does it, it's not okay. But if it's my boss or my manager, that's maybe just the way Australian workplaces are, and I have to put up with that." So I think there's a big education piece, particularly in young people, and that'd be the age group 15 to 18.
Mm. Gee, that's a sad reflection on our workplaces, isn't it? And I mean, you have to think, as as we've both got daughters about to, or you know, entering into that workplace environment, it's sad to think that the numbers are still so high for young people who really are just starting out in the workforce.
You're absolutely right, because it colours their view about what being a productive worker is, and also maybe their ambitions about what it is they want to achieve in work. So, no, I'm absolutely determined that this issue will stay on my agenda and as a priority on my agenda for that very reason that you talk about.
I bet you've got a lot of Australian dads and mums backing you on that one. And you've also looked at same-sex harassment, which I understand has increased as well. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right. For the first time, we really had a bit of a better look at same-sex. So that's men harassing men and women harassing women. And in fact, we found that that men are more likely to be the targets of sexual harassment from other men. In fact, male harassment of men was about 23%, made up 23% of sexual harassment in Australian workplaces.
Right? Wow.
So that was a significant group, and in fact
that
we'd say that men on men would be the fastest growing group of sexual harassment in Australian workplaces.
Why do you think that is? Is that because it hasn't been looked at before, or because it's something that I suppose people feel permission to complain about now because of some of the high-profile cases?
You know, I think there has been a strong educative value with some of the high-profile cases, and some of them have been men-on-men harassment. Mm. But the other thing I think I mean, we don't really have a hard data to tell us what that story is about, because the prevalence study was looking more at the statistical analysis.
Right.
But what we could surmise is that it's the man who's the target is often the man who steps outside the prevailing macho culture of the organisation.
Okay.
Yep. So he's the man who doesn't like sport, but he likes music.
Yep.
He's the man who maybe has more feminine characteristics and, in a sense, puts him a bit outside the tribe.
Yep.
In terms of other men in that dominant environment, particularly where it's a male-dominated environment.
Mm. Now, I know you included in your report for the review into the treatment of women in the Australian Defence Force some data on sexual harassment, but you've included personnel from the ADF this time around as well as part of this survey. How do these findings compare, Liz?
Yes, well, in terms of the ADF, what we found was that the ADF had a similar level of sexual harassment in relation to women as the general community. So, in fact, we know that 25% of women have been sexually harassed in the last 5 years. That was the same figure as the ADF, the Australian Defence Force. In fact, the ADF had a slightly lower rate of sexual harassment of men. In the Australian community, it's around 16% in the last 5 years. In the ADF, it was about 10%.
Okay. Were you surprised by those figures? Did you think the figures might have been higher in the ADF than across the whole range of normal society?
Well, in a sense, I did. And I think part of that's the media treatment of the ADF. I mean, it's an organisation which is open to significant scrutiny, as it properly should be.
Mm.
But in a sense, sometimes they lurch from one negative sexual scandal to the next.
Mm.
And I suppose where that's the picture that's being painted, often you can take that out of context, I suppose.
Yes.
So in one sense, I was surprised. In another, I mean, they are a single organisation,
yeah.
So they have control over what happens in that organisation, over the complaint system, over their preventative and educative strategies.
Mm.
And as they well agree, even being at the community level is not an acceptable place for them to be.
Sure, sure. One of the problems that we have is that people are still reluctant to actually report sexual harassment, as you mentioned, or to make a complaint about it. What's your take on this? Why is this still such an issue, do you think?
Well, it's interesting, because those that report, we found actually were quite satisfied, or very satisfied, in fact, with the process. But one of the other findings, which might negate people reporting, is we found an increase in the levels of victimisation for those that did report.
Right.
And in fact, if I go back to the 2003 study, there's been almost a doubling. In fact, almost one third of people who report now say that they are victimised as a result of that reporting. So that will be a real disincentive to people speaking up about sexual harassment. I think that's an area we really need to focus on.
Yeah, because that's going to retard or work against what you're trying to achieve, isn't it, if there's that sort of greater problem of victimisation. So that is a concern.
It is a concern. And not only that, one of the things that our study found also is the role of a bystander. So that is someone who's not the target of a harassment, but who may observe it or hear about it afterwards.
Mm.
And our study showed that of those people who were bystanders, over 50% of them took some action. So that is, they may have even brought a complaint themselves, or they actually went and provided counsel to the target or a range of other things. So I do think we need, and when I say we, I suppose it's employers, unions, those people in organisations need to make it safe for targets as well as bystanders to speak out against sexual harassment.
That's really important, because I know in the race area, there's been some research on the positive impact of bystanders intervening in some way, in a safe way, but in a way that assists the person, and how that really minimises the impact of the racial harassment or race discrimination. So you'd have to think that translates across to this area, and so there's some real benefits there, aren't there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the things we know from previous research that we've undertaken is that bystanders will stand up when, firstly, they feel a strong affinity with the target of a sexual harassment, but secondly, when they're assured that it's safe to do so. And that's the structural part, I think, that workplaces, employers, unions, other organisations and associations would be well advised to start working on.
So, Liz, you've now got three sets of data over the last decade. What do those data sets mean for workplaces, and what would you like to see happen in response to these results?
I mean, I think the data sets show that sexual harassment is part of Australia's landscape, particularly in relation to workplaces, that it is, yes, a gendered story. So most harassers are men, and the majority of harassment is against women. But the fact is that men on men, sexual harassment is an increasing group. So the focus needs to be on prevention strategies, even a greater focus. It needs to be about strong leadership. It needs to be about building inclusive cultures. But I do think there's also space for a community-wide education campaign, maybe something similar to the drink driving, anti-smoking, anti-violence against women, some kind of community education campaign, because it will take all of us, business, unions, government, and committed and concerned Australians to step up and take action to remove sexual harassment from Australian society.
It's that cultural change that it's all about, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Well, thanks, Liz. There's no doubt about the value of research and its analysis to address a major community issue like this in a focused and consistent way. And thanks for taking us through it and giving us the details.
Thank you very much, Graham.
And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember, this podcast is for you. So if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk, or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graeme Innes, GraeMeInnes. Also, if you want to engage more on human rights issues, have a look at tellmesomethingidontknow.gov.au, our Something in Common project, where you can read fascinating human rights facts and stories, participate in polls, add your own content, and find out what you can do to advance human rights issues in Australia. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next PodRights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graeme Innes. Goodbye for now.